Ask not what your corn dog can do for you. Ask what you can do to your corn dog. For example, slather it in mustard is always a good place to start.
Sauerkraut.
Or sauerkraut. Mm. On a corn dog? I mean, how would that even work?
I don't think I've ever actually eaten a corn dog.
Mm. Well, that's your loss. Yeah.
They're good.
I mean, why am I talking about corn dogs? I don't know. Anyway, this is Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast, where we pick an obscure or underseen film with less than 5,000 votes on IMDb-bizzle. And we shoot the shit about whether or not that fuckwad is a horror gem or a turd, or maybe we're conflicted about it. You never know. My name is Cody, and the man in my dreams is more of a man than you.
I'm Beth, and can you please mansplain my brain?
I'm Buggy, and I'm someone quite tall, about 6 feet, blue eyes, good-looking, and attractive to women.
Fuck, that's true.
Oh, wow.
Except for the eye color.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, a couple things up top, up front, up bottom, front bottom. Beth and I went to see Splinter at the Clinton Street Theater. That's almost a tongue twister. Splinter is a 2008 creature feature starring Shea Whigham that I saw a long time ago and remembered liking, so I wanted to see it again. I really wanted to see it on the big screen. And I thought it was fun. What did you think about it?
I thought it was great. And this is a good forum for me to say I'm sorry we slipped out before the director Q&A, but we had a lot of chores to do. But I hate doing that. It was a great movie. It was just like super fucking fun, like, and different.
Yeah, it's fun. I like a good creature feature. Sometimes they're not good, but this one is good. And if you've never seen it, check it out. Very simple, tight creature feature thing.
Shea Whigham is a really good actor too.
Yeah,
it's fun to see him as like, I mean, he always take, you know, like in what was he in last, Perry Mason, the scenes he was in, he's pretty like, he's not a scene stealer, but he's like a highlight.
Everything,
he's fucking good. A lot of HBO shows
for sure. We're going camping this weekend. Hopefully we don't get murdered or abducted by aliens or abducted by ICE agents. You never know. Camp gear scattered all over our recording studio, which is also our living room, and it's kind of chaotic in here, but whatever. And on that topic, do y'all have any favorite camping or camp-themed horror films?
You want to start? How about you, who made this question?
That's true, because I need time to think.
Okay, I can start. I want to call out a couple. I have a handful, but I want to call out two in particular. The first is Just Before Dawn from 1981, which I think is a criminally underseen early entry into the slasher subgenre that does some fun and interesting things. And then a newer film, The Ritual from 2017.
That's on my short list, yeah.
Yeah, which takes a very interesting turn that you might not expect, but it's definitely a backpacking camping movie. I think about it every time I put on a backpack, so...
Yeah, I do too. We watched it in a tent, I think. And
we did, yeah. It was intense.
The last time Buggy and I were at Powell's, I realized that it's a book. It was based on a book.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was in the horror section. And I was like, oh shit, The Ritual was a book. No wonder it's so good.
Is it just a book with the same name? Because as I was saying...
No,
it's the actual
It was one
story.
Of those now a major motion picture. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, because there are like 20 movies called The Ritual.
No, but it is the one because I looked at it. I think. I mean, I don't want to be.
It is also it's just because, and it's like, dad has that book too, and he watched the movie.
The movie's good.
Cool, cool, cool.
And the author like does some other. He's written some other books that are like popular too. I think
I'm gonna just haven't read interrupt them. You because I want to say the fucking Blair Witch Project.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
I was gonna say The Burning. I thought like I love The Burning. Was gonna say that one. But that one I like. There's a lot of creative, weird kills in that, but also some like kind of sad moments in this way I can't explain.
Filmed on the same set as Friday the 13th.
That's what I was about to say. I mean, you have to like give a nod to Friday the 13th and Kevin Bacon's butt, right? That's the first one.
I know. So. I always forget he's in that every single time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Full butt.
Arrow through neck.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, camping. It's not as scary as you would think. Actually feels safer camping sometimes. I'm more scared of like raccoons than I am of like getting slashed and diced.
Really? I mean, I'm more scared of animals. We will take, we just found out that our dog is actually Nicolas Cage. So we'll have him with us and he has his little backpack and he's pretty tough.
The AI ChatGPT said,
boo.
And this was sent to a family group chat and I guess no one else read it.
We don't read the GPTs.
But it was very funny. It says our dog looks like Nicolas Cage and that's all I'm going to say. No one wants to hear about it.
Nope.
At least I brought it up. In this room.
Fuck that shit. Okay. And fuck all the shit. It's Beth's night. She picked the movie. What movie have you selected to be eviscerated this evening?
So my selection is The Night Walker from 1964. I went back into the past because I've had some real bad luck with new movies.
That happens.
Yeah, it does. True. Yeah, Night Walker.
Night Walker. Yes, as noted, released in 1964, directed by the one, the only William Castle. If you don't know William Castle, we'll talk about him a bit later. Important director in the history of horror. Written by Robert Block, we'll mention him a bit later also. This is starring Barbara Stanwyck as Irene Trent, Robert Taylor as Barry Moreland, Hayden Rourke as Howard Trent, Judy Meredith as Joyce Holiday. That's a great name. Probably some other people that are important, but I didn't write them down because whatever. The music was done by one Vic Mizzy, which is a great name. He was famous for the Addams Family theme.
Oh, that's a cool song.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the music a little bit throughout this episode as well. The director of photography, Harold E. Stein. Where can you watch this motherfucking thing? It's on the Internet Archive and it's on YouTube for free. Free on both of those. It's on no legitimate subscription or rental sites right now, which I think is interesting. However, you can rent a DVD or Blu-ray if you have access to such things. Okay, what is this goddamn old film about?
It's old, you guys. Okay. The Night Walker opens with some really like sweet visuals and trippy narration, and you get a titular line right off the top because when we sleep, we're night walkers.
Oh yeah, I was gonna mention the titular line.
I know. I figured
you beat me to it. Ding ding ding! Ring the titular line bell.
Anyway, then we're introduced to Irene, who's played by Barbara Stanwyck, who's married to Harold. He's a super rich blind dude. But he's also a possessive jerk. He's an inventor of some kind. He thinks Irene is cheating on him because she's been talking in her sleep. She has some kind of dream lover. The thing is, Irene never leaves the house because Harold is so fucking jealous and controlling. Harold's lawyer, played by Robert Taylor, is the only person who comes and goes from the house, from their mansion. Harold's lawyer's name is Barry. Barry happens to be there when Harold accuses Irene of cheating. Then Harold slaps Irene. But then he promptly goes to his lab and explodes himself to death. So that's kind of cool. Lawyer Barry is put in charge of the estate. After getting freaked out in the mansion, Irene moves into the apartment in the back of a beauty salon that she conveniently still owns. And new employee Joyce helps her move in. But Joyce has her own motives. The line between dreams and reality start to get blurry, and Irene begins to be haunted by a burned-up Harold. Is he a ghost? Is it all a dream? Is he actually alive and trying to exact revenge? So Irene and Barry try and find out what's going on. Sort of like, it gets a little like noir detective style. And it starts to turn into like, is the broad crazy? And then there's a dreamy wedding sequence, and Irene's dream lover morphs into Harold, and the guests and the officiant at the wedding are wax figures. So Barry and Irene go back to the chapel. Like, she recognizes it from real life. So they go back to the chapel where the dream happened, and then they find the wedding ring from the dream. So there's like that physical artifact brought into real life from a dream. And then a private investigator named George Fuller, who you didn't mention in the credits, he's the other main character, he shows up. And he's also the dream lover, or is he, or does she, you know, like, is she just losing her fucking mind?
Dream lover.
Have a exactly. Leave, you can, something, is that what you're doing?
I believe you can eat my corn dog tonight.
Oh, we got corn dogs. Corn dogs are back. So it gets harder and harder for Irene and us as viewers to tell what's real, what's a dream. And then Joyce from the beauty salon gets fucking murdered. And all kinds of double crossing ensues before a final twist and a kind of wild ending.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, mostly it's just like, it's one of those crazy woman, is this really happening sort of flicks.
Yeah. Crazy women.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere.
Seeing crazy women.
Very common.
Yep. Okay, good recap for a kind of confusing film. Mm-hmm. It's not super straightforward, but I think that hits the high points there. Before we get started on our analysis, I just want to call out that Vic Mizzy film score because it's probably one of my favorite elements of the film.
Yeah, the music is really cool. It's harpsichord, right? I think that's what I read, is that
there's all sorts of interesting instruments
in it.
There's
like a neat, like, harpsichord theme.
For sure. Okay, so this is a William Castle film, and we've never done a William Castle film. We haven't done a lot of old horror films, but William Castle is one of the original classic horror filmmakers. So if you're a horror nerd that pays any attention to horror history, you probably heard his name. He dropped out of school at the age of 15 to start working behind the scenes of the touring theatrical version of Dracula.
Whoa.
And eventually moved along to Hollywood, where he began directing B-movies. And one of William Castle's claims to fame was that he used gimmicks to shock audiences and sell tickets. And this is from a BFI article. In 1959, when Castle was 45 years old, he finally made a name for himself. The two spooky films he released that year, The Tingler and House on Haunted Hill, became instant cult classics, cementing Castle's reputation as a showman with a great love of gimmicks. From then on, almost all of his output would be released with some extra added dimension. Seats that shook, skeletons that swooped down from the roof of the cinema.
Cool.
Polls that let the audience decide whether or not characters would die. So he really tried to kind of bring in some interactive elements. And I just wanted to do a quick recap of some of the specific ones. So the film Macabre, he offered $1,000 life insurance certificates just in case anyone was scared to death. He also had people dressed as nurses and had hearses strategically placed around the theater. In House on Haunted Hill, he rigged up monsters and skeletons that floated along the ceiling of the theater. The Tingler, a classic Vincent Price vehicle, he installed vibrating motors in the seats that were strategically timed to go off at specific points during the movie and, like, shake the people in those seats. In 13 Ghosts, he used the red and blue filters commonly used in 3D.
Like 3D, yeah. Oh.
However, here, if the audience members looked through just the red filter, you could see the ghosts in the movies. So it wasn't like a 3D film. It was specifically, you could only see the ghost if you used like the red filter.
But if you didn't use it, you couldn't see the ghost. That's cool.
Yeah. Oh. So he did all sorts of weird tricks and gimmicks and stuff. However, Castle eventually opted to move away from these gimmicks and schlocky horror and try his hand at something different with The Nightwalker, in which he claimed that this was a transition from gore into pure shock and suspense, and it would feature a form of human destruction never before seen on screen. So that's something we'll come back to a bit later.
I have a couple things to say about this gimmick thing, though, because okay. although he'd moved away from that, I read a little bit about like the promo campaign for this movie. Mm. So first of all, the lead actors, Robert Taylor and Barbara Stanwyck, were both like old school movie stars, and they'd been married before. And that was part of the promotion, was like, oh. these guys have been divorced for 15 years or 12 years or whatever, and they're back on the screen together. And that was a huge part of the promotion. But the reuniting. Also, in promote, yeah, reunited on screen, you know, some of the promotional gimmicks used in marketing this film, they made a like a short film that actually cost $25,000 to make to market this movie with an actual hypnotist.
Wow.
Who was hypnotizing the audience because there's this whole like dream reality thing to this. And they also made a novelization of the movie.
Okay.
And then the posters for the film, this isn't quite a gimmick, but you guys know the painting, The Nightmare? I can't remember who the... We've joked about it before. It's where the lady's sleeping with, like, one arm draped over the bed, and then there's, like, this demon on top of her.
Yeah, that little we tiny... Joke,
I didn't know that was the name of it, but I know
Yeah,
what
we joke about it being this cat who's right
why?
Here.
Why?
Yeah.
It gotta be so mean.
You know why, but that was also, like, they made posters based on that. So that's just a few things that I... So even if he left behind some of the more schlocky stuff, still, I don't think he could help himself that... When he was promoting the movie, he went big.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Can't not do it, I guess. Yeah. I think it is cool also. So the other thing I wanted to talk about William Castle is sort of a William Castle versus Alfred Hitchcock. Because
there's
one thing.
Beef?
Yeah. Well, they were two masters.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I don't think they had actual beef. But one thing we noted while we were watching this was that it felt very Hitchcockian, especially some of those driving scenes that went on forever.
So much. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Just the driving was like in Psycho or The Birds. Like.
Exactly. So, yeah. As we were watching this, it was like, this kind of feels like a Hitchcock film. And then I found this note, and this is in the same BFI article that I quoted earlier, which is the Buttfucker Institute, obviously.
You wish. I'm going to go get an apprenticeship. I'm going to go do a, what is it called?
I'm going to audit classes.
Yeah. So... Castle is often accused of being a low-talent ripoff of Alfred Hitchcock, and it's true that the thumbprints of the legendary director are all over his work. Psycho was a clear influence on the narrative of Homicidal, and Castle even used Psycho writer Robert Bloch on Straightjacket and The Nightwalker.
The Nightwalker.
Yeah, so he used that same writer for this movie. Nevertheless, there was some reciprocity to their relationship. It was the financial success of House on Haunted Hill that convinced Hitchcock that there was an audience for a low-budget horror like Psycho in the first place. So in a sense, the two directors functioned as a kind of scary movie Ouroboros.
I wonder if William Castle was a more, like, a kinder, gentler Hitchcock, because Hitchcock was, like, notorious. Yeah.
Maybe he patted Hitchcock's head gently.
Maybe he did.
Yeah, maybe.
But no, I just... We'll get into all the stuff about women in this, but Hitchcock was kind of notorious for how he treated actresses. And then before we move on from the full William Castle thing, hearing about these gimmicks, this is the thing I forgot to say because we had a dog incident. John Waters.
Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Nope. Nick Cage is not here. John Waters must have been into this shit.
I think he was. Sure. And I think I even seen some references in some of the research I did.
Because we've
seen John Waters talking about William Castle films.
Yeah. Polyester and Smell-O-Vision.
Yeah.
Which sadly, Buggy didn't go for.
I know. I always like miss.
No, that one is one we don't even need to get into because you did a great service to the. Our old dog was dying and you stayed home with them. We didn't know he was dying yet.
Yeah, it's true.
But you were like, I'd rather be home with a dog. And then later on, I was like, fuck, I really enjoyed Polyester and Smell-O-Vision. And then the dog died like 3 days later.
With the original smelly cards. Right?
We didn't. Yeah, we that have that. Dope. Yeah, we have. No, they were like in his office in Baltimore. But anyway, so that kind of like 3D scratch and sniff vibrating seats. That's so fucking cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish people still did that kind of stuff.
Yeah. It's just too gay for this new America.
They do, I guess, gimmicks still. Isn't?
Oh yeah,
lots but of... just like not like cool theater ones. Like
there's weird new popcorn buckets or something.
Well,
right?
Yeah, but that's they the also thing? They do like promo like for the like last Final Destination. They like put weird signs on like trucks that carry logs.
Oh, that's because cool.
Everyone always they says call them that.
Logging trucks.
I don't know. I like. I'm scared that's wrong because also I'm gonna get flamed. You know what I mean? Like I just did. You know,
Flamas.
One wrong error.
You should have got it right the first time.
I'm just stabbed.
You can also flame me when I say old people shit.
I do, but then you get mad.
No, we're from the Northwest. You can't say trucks that carry.
I can. You I can say what I want. Damn it. Anyway. I don't have to be anything. I'm free.
You are free. You are free.
No, and then I was going to say for the new I Know What You Did Last Summer, they just have some guy walking around like pretending to be the serial killer from the movie.
Oh, like in the rain slicker?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
You know, they did a lot of stuff for some of the like remakes of Japanese movies where they had the ghosts at baseball games and shit like
Whoa.
That.
Whoa. Yeah. I mean, and then, you know, obviously Blair Witch.
Yeah, for sure.
That's a different thing, but having like the internet. The web page, when that was what you had, that was internet. Is
I know. I think
web
that stuff's cool. I love gimmicks.
I do too.
You know, they get spoiled so easily because everybody's trying to like prove something about something. I got some deep state intel about this and I ruined it for everyone because I can't handle like a bit of fun.
Yeah.
Fuck those fuckers. Anyways, we talked about William Castle. He's a great, great horror director. Make a statue of him somewhere. Let's talk about Grand Dame Guignol, a.k.a. Hag Whore. So we've talked about Grand Guignol before, which is the infamous French horror theater, but I don't think we've ever had a proper conversation about Grand Dame Guignol.
Guignol, yeah.
Yeah.
We got a little into it in what was the Poor Pretty Eddie.
Oh, yeah, Poor Pretty Eddie. Yeah, that was that hit some of the right notes, I think.
And I guess I could get into why, like, I chose this movie because last episode, I felt like there were some Mad Woman themes in the Shaw Brothers movie. What the fuck was the name of it? This is
Hex.
Hex. So in Hex, there were some, like, Mad Woman themes, right? And then I was thinking about that. And so I was looking for something I hadn't seen that had those elements. And then especially Grand Dame Guignol. And I don't know if this actually was one, and we're going to get into that, but
yeah,
like what it means is generally like an old fucked up woman, right?
Yeah, essentially. So
and, yeah,
what I had is, and I love all of the sort of pseudonyms like hag whore, hagsploitation, occasionally psycho biddy, which is
psycho
my, that might, be my favorite one.
I like it just because psycho billy really bothers me. So that is my least favorite of. I like hagsploitation.
You don't like the Reverend Horton Heat?
I mean, I think they're the least bad of every psycho billy band. It gets way worse from there.
Yeah, fair enough. So the kind of summary that I wrote down was Grand Dame Guignol films often feature older women in peril. Or psychotic, dangerous older women. And these films are often starring actresses that at one point were glamorous stars and unfortunately succumbed to one of the biggest crimes in Hollywood, getting old.
Exactly. So whatever happened to Baby Jane?
Yep.
I want to, like, I have a couple things to say about this because I read this article on a blog called When the Woman Screams, and it called this movie an outlier in hagsploitation. I'm just going to read a couple quotes from it because it really kind of spoke to me. The confining state of marriage is the real danger to be avoided in this movie. And it also said in Hagsploitation or Grand Dame Guignol or Psycho Biddy, there's an association of bodily difference to monstrosity. And in this movie, Harold, the husband, is the one with the monstrous body. It's not Irene.
No.
So I just thought that was kind of interesting. Like,
yeah,
it had elements of this confused broad doesn't know like real from fake or whatever. And she was older and she is someone who was a Hollywood young babe who this is actually the last theatrical release of a movie of her career. So yeah, that's interesting.
That hits that note. Yeah. Definitely.
Have you seen Whatever Happened to Baby Jane?
Yes.
And?
Well, I love it. I mean, I like that movie a lot. It's very
It's really long, right?
It's definitely like, I don't know, not a lot is going on really, except for there's beef. There's a lot of fighting. Everyone's miserable.
And it's just a vehicle for these two hams.
Yeah.
Who are wonderful actresses.
They're just, their costume design for like, it's so good. Like, it looks so amazing.
I think that's the film that might have kicked off this subgenre.
Like, where it started. Yeah. Like, you give a couple, and I think, God, I wish I would have looked at newer things, but I feel like older actresses get these roles now too. You know, I feel like the culture's changing, but not, I just punched my mic again. It's changing, but not that quickly.
Love
so.
Doing that.
Yeah, it's kind of just like a ham talker. I feel like Barbara Crampton is having one of those moments, except film has advanced, and so she's getting more interesting roles than just like crazy old woman in trouble or whatever, you know.
Jessica Lange.
Yeah.
Like, it was a young, it was a beautiful woman still, but young, super babe, but has been in like every American Horror Story, you know. Who else can you think of? I mean, I feel like it's a vehicle. Horror especially is like a vehicle for older actresses to like have fucking roles, right?
Yeah, I can't think of anyone like off the top of my head just like that was like younger and is now.
I just think it's a thing that happens. Like, you're a babe and now you're either, you can be a villain if you want a meaty role.
Or you can be a old woman in peril.
Well, oh yes, old woman in peril for sure. But if you want like a meaty role, then you're probably going to be the crazy lady.
Which, like, that kind of sounds fun. Like, I bet it'd be fun to get to play like a really insane person and get to like act on some stuff like that. Like, probably like therapeutic. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be unhinged. Yeah. Especially if you were someone who was like really buttoned up because you were like these act, you know, like talking about Barbara Stanwyck in this movie, or Joan Crawford, Betty Davis, like those studio, in the studio system.
Yeah.
Like, they had to be, they had like a code of conduct. They had to like really present themselves in public a certain way too, not just in movie. Yeah. So they were like really buttoned down. So yeah, getting to be like a old cat lady would be a.
Yeah. That sounds just like pretty fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems, obviously I'm a man, so I can't speak to it, but it almost seems like it might be a bit freeing to not have to be a babe and just to get to kind of like, I'm just going to only rely on my acting chops instead of having to be like strutting it around.
As in art, so in life, right? Yeah. This is where I'm entering the stage of my life where it's like, but where it's not about my looks anymore, you know, because it always was. No, but I mean, it really is like that is the stages of womanhood as you get to a point where that's not what people look to you for, and then you get to be free.
Yeah.
That's so
dudes
nice.
Don't shout out my legs anymore.
Oh,
really?
That did,
stopped?
That used to happen to him. Yeah, now if Buggy and I are walking together and someone's yelling, they're yelling at her. That's been, I mean, it's fine. I'm saying it's freeing.
No, I don't like it. It's not like great to
no,
yell.
No, it's not
at.
Great. That's an announcement.
People don't usually yell at me though anymore because I don't look like a child. That's like the fucked up part. That's the gag of it all.
Now that you look, you could beat their ass.
Yeah,
they're like
now
done.
That I look like.
Now that she's 6 feet with
grown.
Those blue eyes.
Yeah,
and the...
I'm 6 foot and I'm going to be in your wife's dreams tonight.
Yeah.
Sorry, you go.
That's okay. I'll let you expand on everything else you have. But the question I had about this is specifically like Irene doesn't feel like a typical hag to me. Like,
no.
And she's not necessarily a woman in peril, although she is like in a kind of scary, confusing situation. But it's not like she doesn't have some kind of agency, and she doesn't seem particularly weak or helpless. She is in this shitty marriage with her weird, jealous, blind husband.
Oh, Howard, we both need our rest.
Rest? How long do you think it's been since I've had any rest? Knowing that the two of you are meeting behind my back.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, you do. Who is he? Tell me the truth. There is a man, isn't there? Isn't there?
Yes. Yes, I do have a lover. He comes to me every night. He holds me in his arms. He's young, handsome, and tender. He's everything I've always wanted, everything you're not.
Who is he? Tell me his name.
I wish to God I could, but he has no name. He's only a dream.
You're lying, lying!
Only to myself, only when I'm asleep. I'm trying to pretend that I lead a normal life with someone who loves me, don't you understand? I know why my dreams seem real. Because when I'm awake, my life with you is like a nightmare.
The truth! Tell me the truth!
All right, here's the truth! My lover is only a dream, but he's still more of a man than you!
You know, it doesn't really feel like she's your typical... hag. She doesn't even feel that old, you know?
No, but for her as an actress in this era, I mean, this is literally the last movie of her career.
She looks like amazing, too.
She does.
Like,
she and Robert Taylor were both like young sex symbols. And in this movie, that's not. She does look good. She's not. I mean, but that's how I feel when I watch any fucking hag movie.
Yeah.
I gotta say.
Yeah, usually the hags are pretty hot.
But she's not in peril in this movie. She has agency, but in the beginning, she's in an abusive marriage.
Yeah, that's been going on for like a long time.
She's basically locked down. So one other thing I want to say about this is that I think it was the same article with those quotes that this movie came out in 1964, right? So we see like domestic abuse in this movie. He slaps her around. He controls her. In 1964, the Archives of General Psychology published a study outlining the therapeutic benefits of wife beating.
I got to get my hands on that study.
So
shit.
Actually, for its time, this movie and her response to that was like a revolutionary depiction of a domestic abuse survivor. And like, kind of, she has like PTSD from being fucking beat up by her husband. And that wasn't something that was talked about.
Or like portrayed in that manner of like it being that bad,
right?
You know,
and
what I mean, severe.
And I'm not like, I don't think people should go into this expecting to find
it's not like radical, like,
but when you
overly
think about it, and you know, that was what year are we in right now? So 60 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, for the time, that was probably like, whoa.
Yeah,
that's like doesn't happen very often, or at least that's not like depicted again in like that sense, because women get slapped a lot in films.
Yeah,
they get slapped a lot in films. And for a, like, especially, yeah, in this era and like, and before that too, like a lot of women, as we know, just get slapped because they have to get their shit together. Like, oh, you're crazy. I'm going to slap the crazy out of you. So you start making sense, basically.
She's my daughter, my sister, my daughter, my sister.
And the response to that mental breakdown is I'm going to slap your face.
Yeah. One other, my last, like, I'm going to get off the like feminist soapbox.
Yeah.
We have a female gaslighter in this movie, Joyce.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She's not good. She's a
Joyce
bad,
bad
boy.
And Joyce is gaslighting Irene.
And her husband is hot. Sorry, Joyce. Also, wow. She died. Oh, facts. He died, too.
Everyone dies.
No!
Sorry!
Dream man.
Yeah. Well, you know, on this topic of women abuse, fortunately for me, we are going back. So
we are going so far back.
Yeah, we're going back. Let's talk about dreams and reality and dreams versus reality and which ones are which. So there's an amazing opening monologue in this movie with all of these really amazing animations and whatnot. And as we noted, there was a titular line, and we rang the titular line bell.
Sorry, ding, I stole
ding,
it.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, you stole my bell. But from the monologue, we learn that this film is all about dreams.
Do your dreams foretell the future? Men have always sought to understand the language of your sleeping mind. Once they were called fortune tellers. Today, we have psychologists, but the dreams are always the same, full of meaning and menace and mystery. When you dream, you wander into another world where everything is strange and terrifying, a world that exists only at night. When you dream, you become a nightwalker.
So So for me, there are two key elements that are important to the dream sequences in this film. The first is central to the storyline in that are Irene's dreams actually reality? So this is the question she struggles to answer throughout the film, and so do we as viewers. Which brings me to the second element, which is there is nothing about the dream sequences that really separate them from the rest of the film. You know how like often films will apply a filter or will change the music up or will do something weird to kind of announce that this is a dream sequence. In this film, it just is suddenly maybe a dream, which I think is an interesting choice, but maybe not a perfect choice. So I kind of wanted to flag that because this film definitely doesn't make a distinction between reality and dreams. So what do you think about the way that Castle and Robert Bloch centered dreams as a key focal point of the narrative and how they sort of approached that in the film? And do you like anything about the way that they did that? Because I feel like it was pretty central.
It's the whole movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it is the whole movie. I don't know, because I was thinking about that, like watching the movie on the train, especially like when the sort of final twist is divulged at the very end. I was wondering if like, oh, okay, so has this been like an ongoing project that has been like continuously happening? And it also made me think, because of the like nightmare wedding scene, has like that type of shit been happening too? Like weird, unsettling things?
Oh, right.
Or like, has it been just like this guy who was also like a PEI, right? He was like a PI
worked for her husband.
And
he was like, a DEI hire,
Was he just, you know, basically hamming it up with her for months? Like, I don't know.
That's sort of my interpretation.
Yeah.
We watched it twice because Cody fell asleep.
That's
so bad. I watched it twice.
And I think so.
I think, I don't want to give away any. It's, again, one of those movies just like Hex, where the end weirdness sort of makes the movie.
Yeah.
It's kind of boring a little bit in the middle. And the dream versus reality, it's pretty fucking muddled.
I kind of like that, though.
I kind of do, too, but it's like reading something surreal or looking at a painting that's surreal and then having someone explain it to you and then look at it again. You know what I mean? Where it requires maybe more than a casual viewer, you know? Like, on second watch, knowing what was happening, I was like, oh, this is a lot of fun. But it was pretty fucking confusing because the dreams and the reality just like merge into one thing and there is no demarcation.
I guess I kind of just thought of it as like, maybe it's a movie you don't have to think as hard about, you
know?
And
you're just going through it with her.
Yeah, like that's kind of how I look at it. And I think you can look at it in that interpretation too, because there's plenty of things to be found like in this movie.
Right.
But I think the point, like, especially on first viewing, is to be confused. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was necessarily to be like, let's make a clear and concise distinction, because that's kind of the point, right? We're going through this experience with this woman and she doesn't know what the fuck's going on. She doesn't know, like, what's reality. There's, like, random scenes, too, that, like, where, like, she can't get out of being in the dream state, which also, like, in retrospect, it's like, was she asleep at all, you know?
Right, right.
Like, stuff like that. Everything's confusing, I feel like, intentionally.
And maybe that's what makes it a horror movie.
Well, I kind of like that. I don't think it's a horror movie. I know that's for later, because that was a question we're going to ask.
I think it's next, though.
Yeah. I mean, that's the perfect pivot, because, I mean, that really is the crux of what is this movie. I saw somebody say it's more of a thriller. I saw somebody say it's more of a noir.
Yeah, I could see that.
It could be somewhere in between, you know, and as we noted earlier, the bulk of this film does feel very kind of Hitchcockian in that thriller type of way. But there are a few scary scenes in the movie throughout the storyline. And so I thought we could do a quick breakdown of some of those scary scenes to see if maybe they push it over the edge. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
wax wedding pushes it over the edge for me.
Yeah, I mean, I do, like, I don't know. It's kind of complicated because a thriller can be genuinely scary and have, like, weird, unsettling themes. I do think maybe it leans sort of towards the supernatural. Like, I'd say it's kind of a supernatural thriller just because a portion of the movie, like, there's this, like, assumption that dreams and reality are the same thing and, like, that they're, like, coinciding. Because also, like, when you think about it, it's kind of like, it's all, I don't even know how to explain it. I'm like, it's, my brain's breaking. I might be also thinking about it too hard now, which is what you're not supposed to do.
Exactly.
But it's like, she also thinks that somehow, even when she's dreaming, she's not. You know what I mean? And that, like, her dream boyfriend is, like, somehow real and stuff. And he is, but, like, in a different way. I don't know how to explain that.
Isn't, and
it just sounded really dumb. Sorry. It's no, just, it doesn't I can't, dumb. Like, put it into words
I
exactly.
I just started thinking about Vertigo.
Yeah, like, it's just, like, no, disorienting.
You know what I mean? How Vertigo has a similar, and Hitchcock was, like, lauded as a genius for making you go through that experience when you watch Vertigo.
Yeah.
Have you seen Vertigo?
No, okay. I haven't.
You have, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't.
You know what I mean, though? How it's, like,
for sure,
a very similar psychological thing where you kind of go through the experience with the main character. Anyway, yeah, tell us about the scenes that...
Yeah, the scary scenes.
Well, so I think the thing that I took away from this is that there were sort of very specific moments throughout the film that felt like a horror film. But then the bulk of it felt more like a noir or a thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the key examples of the horror elements, obviously, we have the creepy burnt face of Howard that reappears.
Yeah, just how he looks. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As you mentioned, we have this completely surreal and whacked out wedding scene with the wax figures, which is probably, as a horror fan, the best scene the whole film.
It's
yeah,
cool.
It's probably the most memorable, I would say. Obviously, the opening monologue sets this up like it's going to be a straight-up horror film. It's got this whole creepy description of dreams and these, like, amazing animations. It's almost, I don't know, that might be one of my favorite parts of the film.
Yeah,
is just, like, the opening sequence. And then, you know, we have a kind of silly moment where I think it might be during a dream sequence or something where we have just, like, these animated spinning creepy faces that just kind of, like, pop up on the screen, which is sort of laughable these days. Maybe it was effective in the early 60s. I don't know. But, you know, other than that, those are kind of the key horror elements. And then the rest of it, it really does almost feel like detective noir, you know?
Psychological thriller.
Yeah.
Noir. I mean, but okay, counterpoint, how much of that is just because it's old and black and white?
Yeah, sure. But I mean, you could think about The House on Haunted Hill.
Right. And there's
nobody's going to argue that that's not a horror film.
And going back to what Buggy said about supernatural, in the end, is there anything supernatural? We'll leave that. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's maybe we'll leave that because that's what I was like trying to get at is like, it's, you know, unclear to us and the main character, like, what also all of this would mean if the dreams are real, too. Like, she's, like, really in the dark, and so are we for most of the movie on, like, what would even be the point of that? Like, why is this happening? So it does kind of feel like supernatural in a sense, but I just think it is a thriller, like, in general, because also, you know, like, Burnt Face, I mean, there's, you wouldn't call, like, Seven a horror movie, you know what I mean? And there's, like, a bunch of, like, gross violence.
I think some people do call Seven a horror movie.
There's an argument
we've had
to be
this,
made there.
Yeah.
I'm on your side. I feel like
it's a cop movie.
It's, like, a dark thriller, police procedural.
So I'm...
And, like, on the Venn diagram of thriller and horror, there's a lot of, like, intersections.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Because
know?
I feel like Seven is scarier than a lot of horror movies.
Yeah.
Like, Gluttony is fucking scary.
Oh, yeah. Sloth?
Sloth, is that the one where he's on the bed?
Yeah. Sloth, like, if you think about it long enough...
I don't want to talk about it.
It's really bad.
So I don't know... But I know what you guys mean, and I do think after watching this twice, I'd say it's more of like a noir thriller. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I don't know what the... It's like pornography, you know it when you see it.
The thing I wanted to end with is kind of coming back to that quote I brought in at the beginning, which is William Castle saying that this was a transition from gore into pure shock and suspense, which at first I was kind of like, okay, it almost sounds like he's moving away from horror, but shock and suspense, that can also be horror.
Yeah.
That's, you know, like, so it's like, is that saying something about this being one or the other? It's an interesting quote. I mean, it's kind of open-ended, but...
He's trying to class it up, I think.
Yeah, he is kind of trying to class it up. And I don't think we covered this, but there is a twist in this movie that we're not going to give away. But,
yeah, because it's at the very end. Yeah.
And it could maybe push you one way or the other.
Yeah, twice. I said it when I summarized it, and I...
Don't get mad at me.
I'm not mad at you. Stop gaslighting me. I said it twice.
I guess it's up to you to determine whether this is a horror movie or not. I think from my perspective, if it wasn't William Castle, I would maybe lean more towards that this is not a horror film. But the fact that, you know, he's a classic horror film director coming off of some of his big classic horror films, this kind of has that pedigree, so maybe that pushes it over the edge.
Yeah, I mean,
do you guys think Baby Jane is a horror movie?
That's a tough one. I don't know.
I don't think so, but I think, again, like I said, like there's a lot of intersections with horror and thrillers, like because they both can be very scary and have like uncomfortable scenes in that way that make you like feel similarly. And I think they also like intersect a lot. Like there's a lot of horror thrillers, you know. And I also was going to say just about like William Castle and like his statement. I mean, he didn't say this was a thriller, you know. It seems like to him, at least, this is still a horror movie from like what you said. So I guess like by that definition, since he made the movie.
Intent.
Yeah.
Right.
Good point. Okay. That's all of my key talking points. Do we have anything else we want to talk about before we get into some... business, some big ones, some before business. We do our big
ones. Oh, it's time to do the big ones.
One. Clock it.
Yeah, thank you. I was like, what is it? Somebody's got to do something else. Yeah. Big ones and clocking. No, I, no.
Nobody has.
I got no more big ones.
Okay. Your big one. I don't remember when I said that.
I think it was the last episode.
Did I say
maybe.
Did his big one, like someone?
When a dude beat the shit out of a woman.
Yeah, he did his big one. Which is actually kind of like not the right way.
It is relevant and it is interesting. Jesus, we haven't talked about this yet. But
the ties between the two movies.
There is a kind of interesting link between the movie we did last week and the movie we're doing now. In that there is this partner that is deceased that comes back to haunt the person. So there's this very similar storyline, which I think is kind of cool. And I don't think we did it on... Yeah, I don't think you did it on purpose,
right?
Well,
no, I was sort of looking for that crazy woman gaslighting thing, yes.
Yeah you like it.
I love being gaslit. Like it's my love language,
like that
gaslighting.
Stuff. You love it.
No, but I did kind of look for, because I feel like that was sort of an undercurrent of last week's movie, but not a main, it went a lot of different ways. So I was kind of looking for that.
Yeah.
And they have some similar themes, though. Abusive husband.
Yeah.
Unreliable female lead.
Facts, like betrayers, like trusted women who betray.
Oh, and that too. Yeah. Oh, yes. No, Joyce and last week, Lee.
Yeah, I can't remember the character's name.
I can't remember anything from 1 week to the next.
Yeah, there are very similar characteristics between those two characters also. Mm-hmm. Cool. I love it when there's sort of an intersection between completely different random movies, you know.
That's God. I mean, the connection between all things, that's where you...
it's a one big circle.
Here's, my special time is going to be about Buddhism. No,
that's
I'm kidding.
Satan giving us his...
Satan is God.
Yeah.
His little kiss.
Satan is God. Let's do an obscurity rating on this cum dumpster. IMDb votes 2,726. IMDb critics, 37. Rotten Tomatoes, we got 3 critic reviews. And this is only available at 2 places that are kind of not official. You know, YouTube, it's not like an official YouTube channel. It's just somebody posted it up there.
Yeah. But you watched the whole movie, right?
And I did.
It worked.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's on the Internet Archives. Obviously, as we noted, there are DVDs and Blu-rays floating around here, but you can't find it on any of your standard platforms. All in all, it's a 7.
Wow, I'm surprised. Yeah.
With our rating scale, I was kind of surprised also, but yeah. And I think it's probably because it just doesn't have that big digital availability.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do the thing that we love to do.
The thing.
With the piss in our pants. Is we're going to vote on this. Is it a gem? Is it a turd? Is it somewhere in between? On the count of 3, we'll do our thumbs up and thumbs down. Oh, I realized. So the thing that we've been doing that I think is an accident is that I think the like Robert and Ebert scale is like thumbs up or thumbs down.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't even realize that.
Robert and Ebert. That's Roger what I think it's called.
Roger and Skeep.
Siskel and Ebert.
Dongle and Deep Hurt. Like,
Nice.
I don't know what their names
Click
are.
Click and Cat. They're Click and Cat Black, the Tappan Brothers.
Fucking irrelevant movie reviewers that know no shit about anything.
Siskel and Ebert are, yes, no longer relevant. They're both dead.
Well, fuck them. we're going to do a thumbs up and a thumbs down on the count of 3. Here we go.
Oh, gosh.
3, 2, 1.
Okay, the block is back. Nice.
Interesting. Here's the reveal. We had 2 up, 1 down. I was the 1 down. Mm-hmm. I am a down man lately.
Oh. What made you feel this way?
What's making you feel so down right now?
About this movie.
The system. The system of system a down. So now we're going to do our thoughts and feelings, which is what we do now after we vote, which is a new thing. I think is a good change. Does anyone want to explain their ups or downs?
I'm going to go first because I picked it. I am going to admit that I didn't even like the whole movie that much, but there were some things about it that I really liked. And I think the debate about whether or not it's a horror movie or not is real. But I think some of the things we like about horror movies wouldn't happen without shit like this.
Yeah.
And the music was fucking incredible. The acting was over the top. Barbara Stanwyck screaming.
So good.
I mean, this is like high caliber old Hollywood talent, which I'm into old Hollywood. And so to me, it was kind of fun for that, like the kitsch value or the like nostalgia. Yeah, it was pretty fucking convoluted though. And that is why I thought about voting down. It was confusing. But in the end, I really liked how it ended.
I think it looks really cool. And I like some of the editing specifically in this movie, like the beginning scene.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed. And overall, I just kind of liked the aesthetic of this movie, and I thought it was fun and, like, cozy. Like, I just viewed it as sort of, like, a confusing movie that's not necessarily meant to be fully understood or, like, thought about too hard.
But you might tell people to watch it, right?
Yeah, because like, that's how I think, feel about like, it. That's also what, like, made me lean towards thumbs up is, like, I definitely would recommend this to people who like old movies or just like horror movies and, like, this type of story, I guess.
Fair enough. So I enjoyed the horror elements, but the story was a bit ludicrous to me when you really think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it leaned a little bit too much into the noir thriller territory. And this film can't really decide whether it is a noir thriller or a creepy horror film, which that's fine. Films can straddle the line between genres. But I think with this movie, I felt like it couldn't decide which one it wanted to be. And that kind of like pushed and pulled me in ways that weren't effective. Although I do got to say the goddamn music was real cool.
Yeah.
I almost think the opening sequence hyped me up and then let me down.
You thought it was going to be so cool and then it was sort of flat in the middle. I could see that.
Totally. Yeah. Like the opening sequence, I was just like, okay, I'm like so ready to ride for this thing. And then it kind of like slid into this kind of classic 60s noir thing, which is fine. But if you're, for me, if I'm looking for like a good horror film, I kind of felt like I was set up and let down. So, but there were things I liked about it. Yeah, it definitely, it wasn't a piece of shit for sure. It was well made.
It wasn't a turd.
I don't think
actually
it was a
it's
turd.
Been voted a gem.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been technically, yeah.
Technically, 2/3.
It's a partial gem.
But as the dictator here, I can decide.
I know, I was going to say, this is still a democracy. I don't know, though.
Yeah, the voters have spoken. And now it's time for special time.
Special time.
What do we got for special time tonight?
Well, we're going to just kind of roll straight into it from that last thing, which my special time is just in praise of old movies.
Boom.
Love them.
I think it's funny that the 21-year-old in the room is much more open to older or black and white films than my life partner.
They can be really cool looking.
They can be, but also it's not just always, you know, oh, here's the history of film. You love Sunset Boulevard, right?
Of course.
Okay, so we have that. We were talking about The Night of the Hunter earlier.
Which is an awesome, scary movie.
It's actually fucking scary. It's so well done. You
the
know,
Haunting.
The Haunting.
Iconic scary movie.
Oh, shit. I had another big one that I thought would get him. He hasn't seen Night of the Hunter.
I don't think so. Yeah.
But then even, you know, fucking Spider Baby. Like, we've watched
Spider
a couple.
Spider Baby is really great, too.
Some of these old. And then I kind of went into, what about just black and white? So I was thinking about Eraserhead, but that's not an old. But sometimes old movies. You know, fucking Citizen Kane. Have you watched Citizen Kane?
Of course.
Okay. Have you?
No.
Okay. So it's like a divided room, but just in praise of older movies, just like older novels. Sometimes it's all bullshit and we move past it. But sometimes you go back and you watch something and you're like, fuck.
No, it looks great.
Okay, so like some Italian and French movies too.
Yeah.
You know, like Fellini or Agnes Varda or what's his face? Like,
I don't know.
Breathless.
No,
Godard.
Girl.
Like, there's a lot. Sorry, I'm slapping myself. But like these older movies from like the 60s where you watch it and you're like, this is fucking revolutionary.
Or that movie like M, that weird sci-fi movie that's in black and white,
oh,
which
yeah,
is really
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Yeah, like sometimes you go back, you watch a movie from 1960, whatever. It's black and white, maybe it's color, and you're like, it's like the same as when you read The Grapes of Wrath, and you're like, oh my God, these same struggles have always been right. The same struggles.
And I think in some ways it can like benefit. Like there's like definitely a really interesting like way it can like shift a movie's tone and like
from time and getting to like breathe like a
and also just like make a I feel like it makes movies it has an effect of making them more like moody
or prescient.
Yeah.
Oh, you're just saying the black and whiteness.
Well, yeah, I'm saying like I think also it just like it adds to like I don't know, there's something very dramatic about it, you know what I mean?
Right.
I don't know how else to put it,
but I'm saying given time you watch something and you're like, how did they know that?
Right.
50 years
well,
ago.
Well, I agree with that too, because it's like, it's cyclical. It's the same struggles at the end
always.
Of the day. It's like the same core issues and it kind of resonates, which is cool and also sad.
So here for art, the enduring
beautiful
power
art.
Of art. But yeah, go watch just like an old movie. Like look up, you know, the 50 greatest fucking movies of
Metropolis is good too. Oh, it might be silent, but
hard.
If you can stick the landing, it is a really good
movie.
I
saw it in school. It's true.
It's really good. It looks awesome.
It's hard though.
I'm focused on aesthetics, but I think
Metropolis,
that's
like,
very important.
Live with an organ helps. They did that at the Hollywood, I think.
Yeah. No, music is, you need that with silent films.
Yeah.
It's very important.
So yeah, I'm just saying, watch an old movie.
They're great.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them are horror movies that I'm speaking of, and some of them are not. And but it's
doesn't have to be a detriment, you know, like to the movie.
Just because it's old, it doesn't necessarily. Like Sunset Boulevard is still a perfect fucking movie. Yeah,
there's some really creative, relevant,
pretty close to being perfect.
Yeah, it's almost perfect.
We've already talked about this, but he needs to watch it.
It's really good.
Yeah. Anyway. Can I explain myself?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So
take my special time.
I want to say for the record that I don't hate all old movies or black and white movies. Mm-hmm. I often feel that older horror films aren't as effective to me as films starting in the late 60s through the 70s, 80s, and into modern times. But there are plenty of not only horror films, but older black and white films that I love. Early Kubrick.
No, of course.
There's a film called The Killing that's
a noir classic.
It's a noir classic that I think is great. Obviously, Dr. Strangelove, one of the greatest classics comedies.
I don't think so.
Oh my God.
But like in terms of just like straight up horror, there are some old black and white films that I love, like The Thing from Another World.
Oh, such a good one.
Which is a Blu-ray my mom bought me.
Oh, yeah.
And we watched it in the backyard, and I was so surprised how good it was.
That's where Smooth Brain came from, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that was something else.
Okay.
Peeping Tom from 1960, one of the original proto-slashers, is amazing. The Innocents. 1961.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Actually scary.
You can't leave out Carnival of Souls.
Yeah.
One of the greatest original horror films of all time.
Yep.
You mentioned Spider Baby. I loved Spider Baby. Night of the Living Dead.
Yeah, Night of the Living Dead. I mean, I feel like these are all, I mean, that's obvious.
The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
But anyways, I just wanted to throw that out there, that I don't hate old movies and I don't hate old horror movies, but I find that my lottery odds are a little more slim when I get into the older horror films in terms of what I'm looking for.
And I'll take that because of this, you bring newer things to the table, because I would just be watching movies from the 60s all day instead of seeing new things. And B, horror is a moving target, right? So
yeah, for sure.
The more updated horror is always, I mean, we've talked about this with so many different movies. It has its finger on the pulse of like what you're actually afraid of. Yeah. So what was that? What's that movie? The only like actually scary movie we've watched.
Savage Lands.
You know, like.
That movie's good.
But it's like, okay, what's the fear now? Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
More and more relevant.
Yeah. The fear's ice. I mean, but no, it's like we're not all really afraid of a psycho dream man coming to get us right now. We're afraid of climate collapse or
shitting
a virus,
ourselves to death.
Yeah.
Shitting ourselves to death because of a virus. Yeah.
Modern problems.
Dictatorship.
No. I mean, it's a good point. It's a good argument, and you know, I think there's a really important argument to be made for horror fans in particular, knowing your history, because it all carries through. And, you know, I think that's what makes it so fun, is even if like the films aren't effective to you personally, you don't find them scary, maybe you find them boring, seeing how they were adapted throughout time is a very important thing.
It is, and that is the opposite of what I was saying, though. I was just saying, like, a lot of movies hold their own.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about horror movies exclusively, is what I was trying to say. It's like, just in praise of old films.
In praise of old films.
That was my special time.
Special time.
Special time.
I liked that, though. That was cool.
I think it was good.
I agree.
He's mad.
No, I feel like I'm always getting... everybody's always mad at me.
No,
you shot it down, Mom.
Did I?
Yeah,
I was just saying, like, that's the opposite of what I was saying. I was saying not for the look how far we've come. I'm not being a bully. I was just saying, watch a movie for its own sake.
You're right. And this is your special time.
It was my special time.
It's your special time. Don't get upset, please.
I'm not upset. He's upset.
Was I making weird faces at you?
Yeah. Actually, that's what I was reacting to, was your face. Was I making weird faces at you?
I don't think so.
Okay.
You both are right now.
At you.
Okay, next up. It is episode 30.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Holy moly. And I get to pick the movie for episode 30.
Shit.
And the movie I am selecting is called The Tin Can Man.
Oh, I don't know about this.
2007. And I ordered a DVD off of eBay that came from Canada, but I believe you can watch this on the internet somewhere.
You tin can?
Yeah, you can watch it in your tin can that you have tied to your neighbor's tree fort or whatever. But I was looking at the DVD case, and I was intrigued by the following quote about this film, which calls the film David Lynch by way of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be a weird one.
Yeah.
It's quite obscure for a newer movie. I don't understand why exactly. I haven't done any research on it. We'll find out.
We're going to see.
And then finally, after episode 30, we're going to take a little break for the month of August because we have some administrative bullshit that we need to do on the back end, if you know what I mean.
Murder, suicide.
Yeah.
No.
I'm kidding. Don't do that. What you're doing, stop.
Stop.
But basically, we haven't had any time to like update our graphics or our logo or build a real website or do any promotion. So we want to spend some time getting our shit together and hopefully grow our audience a bit because we aren't slackers. We care about this. We're trying to do good work.
Stickers.
We do good work.
We're
going to
make stickers.
Stickers coming soon.
Well, you T-shirts. Do good work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just sit here on the couch.
But yeah, we're going to do some work in August. Go back, tell your friends to listen to old episodes. Help us build our army of Nazis.
What do you call that? Anti-Nazis.
Anti-fascists?
Well, sure, but I was trying to think of a funnier.
What?
I don't know.
You think it's funny?
That funnier didn't used to be a word, but now it is.
It's true.
Because it was funnier. More funny. Mm-hmm. No, more funnier will never be.
More funnier is it's an actual sentence you can say.
You can say
combined too.
No, you cannot say combined.
Yes, you can.
The last thing I want to say is that Gem Hunt will always be more funnier than your favorite podcast.
Oh, you two fuckers.
Heck yeah. More funnier.
Yes, there's death in your dreams too. Death and blood, and the realm beyond death, the realm of eternity.
Dirt Dogs on a Gem Hunt. ¶¶